The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday with Dale Campbell. This is GLS. This is your GLS. Whether you're listening to us on Facebook, Google Plus, YouTube, or directly off the website, chef1media.net/live. However, or on the podcast. However you're consuming the show, we do appreciate it. By the way, the show is ultra interactive. If you have a question, submit it. Or if you want to be on the show, just hit me up on the Q&A and we'll see about getting you on the program. We, you know, GLS encourages ultra connectivity. We encourage it. Otherwise, the show would be awfully boring without it, because without you, there is no me. I don't know what that's meant to mean. Anyway, we'll move off that awkward topic. An opinion piece highlighted this week by The Motley Fool identifies that ad blockers are actually good for Facebook and Google Inc. How ad blockers can be better for them. While the ad blocker apocalypse is on us, publishers everywhere want you to really... Everywhere wants you to know that it's a really important thing for them, of course. The term, which refers to the rise of ad-blocking software, the adpocalypse, adblockopolis, says that it's hurting publishers. Ad-based monetization strategies has surpassed an extent amount of listicles, explorers, and lots of editorials, and most, shocker, arguing against ad-blocking software. Although ad blockers have been around for decades, the newest move for Apple, known as the NASDAQ as Apple, has reignited fears. That's because the latest version of Apple's operating system, iOS 9, is allowing ad blockers in its App Store and enabling mobile browsers to cut down load times and data usage. Interesting enough, Apple also benefits from the inclusion of ad blockers on its device at the expense of the biggest operating system competitor. But don't expect Apple to carry every ad blocker. With iOS 9, Apple has made two large changes to its recent publishers. An aforementioned ad blocker was first, but the second was rebranding its former newsstand app as the new Apple News format. The bigger changes between the two strong alignment with Apple IAD, mobile ad delivery platform, that allows publishers to take 100% of all ads they sell and 70% of all ads Apple sells on its news app. Ad blockers don't affect ads on Apple News and third-party apps. We'll get to that. As they are done through Safari browsing. So this essentially hurts Alphabet-owned Google monetization on Apple devices. Yay! Sort of. Remember that we don't want... See, we live in a weird world. We live in a world where we like ads, and then we live in a world where we don't like ads as well at the same time. Because ads are bad. We want our content. We want our content. God damn it, give us our content. But, you know, it's a never-ending cycle of content. And now that we live in a world where content is more free-flowing than what it used to be, it certainly creates for an interesting thing as well. Another company that starts to benefit from Apple's decision is Facebook. Much like Apple, Facebook operates on a 170 model with its publishers, The vast majority of users use Facebook app for mobile browsing. Ad blockers haven't had as much impact to Facebook's monetization model, commented a company spokeswoman to CNBC. Now, if there is only ad blocker that could go block ads on a third party or on native apps, that's going to happen. Adblocker being a choice was blocked by Apple. There was one ad blocker that was blocked by Apple being choice. The company's Apple, which blocks ad on the device of mobile browser and verify of native and third-party apps, including Facebook and Apple News, was pulled from the App Store after being available for only a few days. Ad blocking technology was quite revolutionary in both its level of technology and deep impact inspection to filter out ads. Apparently, Apple had issues with ad blocking technology and Bean Choice wanted to work to remain in the Apple App Store, but it appears that Apple is unwilling to do so. So, it's interesting that Facebook and Apple, that's interesting. Facebook and Apple are kind of working with the ad blockers and kind of working against the ad blockers. It's a very, very interesting kind of, it's kind of a weird. Kind of a weird flip-floppy thing as well. It's kind of, yes, we want to work with you, but you know, we really want to be doing our own thing as well. It's quite an interesting perspective to be in. It's quite an interesting, like, here's where we want to be. We want to do this sort of ad blocking. They're turning into a more of a opt out of ads kind of strategy, which is smart. I mean, they understand, they've done their research, they understand that people don't want to see ads. But the thing is, they want people to have their content freely of whatever as well. But they just. They want people to have, you know, whatever they want. But I don't see how people are making this a better choice, per se. It's not a better choice. The better choice is to have, you know, the better choice is to not have so many ads, or have an opt-out model. I personally like the opt-out model, because the opt-out model means that the views can be potential, the ads can be potentially viewed, but if they're not viewed, they're not in people's faces. It's hard to explain. In a world where we are surrounded by ads constantly. And by advertising constantly, we kind of have to make strategic moves as to what ads we see and what ads we don't see in a particular sense as well. Because some ads we can go, oh, you know, that doesn't really bother me, whereas other ads would completely bother people as well. And you do have to take into consideration people's sensibilities to advertising as well. So, and advertising is really, it's a funny key issue as well. Advertising is, so it's such a finicky area advertising is. It's no black or white with advertising. It's kind of this gray area of that sort of thing as well. And advertising, there's no right or wrong way to do advertising. I'm not saying that. I'm not implying that at all. I'm implying that it's not black and white. It's kind of, there's advertising is a weird thing to kind of nail down as well. As we continue here on, anyway, on other, in other news of this segment, Michael Jackson. You know Michael Jackson. You know, singer man. He did the singing thing. Could there be a reality show made after the late singer that will chronicle his last days? Yeah, probably. Probably not. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about a Michael Jackson show. It's the deal between PBS's Thomas Smiley and Warner Brothers, as ads pop up on this website everywhere. Yay, you gotta love that. According to the Latin Post, who report according to Deadline, the deal is to adopt Smiley's book to title, quote, "Before You Judge Me, the Triumph, colon, the Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days." The book and TV series is an intimate account of the final 16 weeks of the superstar's life. Although Jackson had an extraordinary life and an extraordinary career that spanned out 4 decades before his death, the TV show itself will only be about his life before he died in 2009. The book, and presumably the TV show, is basically the final 2 months of his leading up to his death. That includes his sheltered extinction due to immense popularity. The star was hardly able to lead a normal life because he is so highly chronicled by magazines, news, and other various media. Again, I don't know how I feel about a Michael Jackson television program. It's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about a Michael Jackson TV show, to be completely fair. What is also apparently unique to the book is that Smiley was able to recover the most basic concept of Jackson's motivation at the time. He spoke about things like the pressure and how it caused Jackson to become socially fragile and unable to function like a normal human due to being because of it. I don't know. I'm not one of these people to go, "Hey, don't make fun of the dead." But this is kind of, "Hey, don't make fun of the dead." I mean, it could be, I haven't heard of this book, to be completely honest. I think that it's not strange. Michael Jackson has released two studio albums from his grave, so there could be stranger things that happen, trust me. But I think it's just, I don't know. What do you think about the Michael Jackson Michael Jackson TV show? I think I might put this up on my Facebook page and see what the Facebook page to see what people think of this Michael Jackson show. I feel it's just too in the f in people's face. I don't know. It doesn't. I mean, I'm not inherently against it, but I think that it just doesn't need to exist. We don't need to reveal what happened before he died and before he passed away. I don't know. It's probably going to be a good show. I'm not denying that, but does it really have to exist? It's the important question of the day. As we continue here on GLS, well, today, do you know what today is? Today is Back to the Future Day. But Back to the Future was not the only thing to predict wild means of transportation. There has been other depictions in the past that have shown us depictions of wild transportations to one place and another. We'll run through them as we continue here on GLS. It's Dale Campbell. It's GLS. It's the 21st of October. Happy Back to the Future Day. As we continue, it's 11:20.
And now I've climbed up your mountain, so climb above your trees and spread my wings into your wind. Let my soul go free. And I was flying across the sky. My soul was sailing out there, nowhere left to hide.
Find us on Twitter. Just use the hashtag GLSShow. This is a generic live show with at the Dale King.
Spread my wings into your wind and let my soul go free.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday. This is GLS. And remember, you can follow me on Twitter if you wish. At the Dale Campbell. I think the bumper got a little bit cut off there. That's right, at the Dale Campbell if you want to follow me on Twitter. Now, you know what today is? And we told you before the show started, we told you today was international, but it's Back to the Future Day. That's right, Back to the Future Day. But Back to the Future was not the only art form that depicted modes of travel throughout the history of time. You might be aware along the way when Marty McFly and Doc Brown traveled through time in 1989's Back to the Future Part 2, but here we are, scary. After all that time, we are finally here. The film made numerous predictions that have been pretty spot on, from the use of drones and fingerprint scanning to tablet computers and hands-free gaming, wearable technology and video calls. Even Marty McFly's hoverboard is almost a reality. Lexus, a Japanese car manufacturer, recently unveiled a readable prototype. One of the film's largest predictions, however, was clearly missed the mark, namely flying DeLorean cars. Although one of the film's producers, Bob Gale, has claimed that they knew that the world would not have flying cars by 2015. But God, we have those in our movie. Because why wouldn't you have hoverboards in your movie to be completely fair. I mean, really, why wouldn't we have flying cars in a movie? Because flying cars are awesome. When it comes to other predictions of how travel might work in the future, flying personal transportation has been something of a contest. Telegraph.co.uk in their travel section, ironically enough, has a bunch of paintings that were depicted by French artists in the late 19th century that stumbled upon science fiction author Isaac Asimov in the 80s to demonstrate. So we've got a few of them here for you. The Aero Cab Station, which looks okay, except for it has a train with wings. I don't know what that's about. It has aerial firemen, which would be pretty cool. It would save a lot of lives, trust me. Next on the list is the rural postman, which I don't know about that. It looks like he's riding a spoon. I don't know what I feel like about a postman riding a spoon. And aviation police, which, I don't know, it's about aviation police wearing no armor whatsoever to just be out there without protection like that, with propellers and planes that could legitimately, you know, slice a dude in half. But even more fanciful were depictions of life under the sea by the year 2000. Surely we'd be taking humpback taxis. Oh, yes. So, whale bus. A whale bus is something that was on the list as well, which looks realistically more like an underwater submarine. But we'll get to that in a sec, trust me. Next on this list is a croquet party under the sea, which I don't know about croquet. Which, of all the sports we could play underseas, I don't think croquet is one of them. A race in the Pacific, which I think they're riding catfish or sea snakes. Can't be too sure of that. Other modes of transportation, depicted on German postcards produced on half the Coronor Hyde brands, were equally as imaginative. Which one of them featured what looks to be a Pennyweather, the bicycle, but it's riding along water, which is really, it's really weird to think about. These postcards predicted sea trains to be a thing, which that would be pretty cool. I could do with a sea train. And personal flying machines, which would be, yeah. And I don't know about you, about a whole family riding in a small enclosed box, though. But anyway. And tourist boats that can go underwater as well. So, we have those. And next up is Airbuses, my favorite. I like the Airbuses. Further predictions from the time, courtesy of J. Effrith Wilkins, a civil engineer, were published in the Ladies' Home Journal. He envisioned, among other things, electric ships across the Atlantic in 2 days and trains that could cover 150 miles per hour. While it takes cruise ships to travel from Britain to New York, it takes a week, bullet trains can go up to 270 miles per hour. Interesting how people view travel these days. As we continue here on GLS, well, it wouldn't be a GLS without copyright stories, would it? Would it really? We have the full impact. We're going to get a little bit serious here on GLS. We have the full impacts of what the TPP means to you. As we continue here on GLS, it's 11:30.
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday with Dale Campbell. This is your GLS. We are ultra connective. If you have a question, just drop us a line. We'll be more than happy to address it here on a Wednesday, the 21st of October. I feel like I'm going to burp live on air. That would be embarrassing. And I just did. So, I don't know if you've heard about this TPP thing. The Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, before the text has ever been sent to the Australian public. The TTP is bad news for democracy and will allow multinational corporations to sue our government over laws that protect our health and environment. So what... Okay, so the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a major trade deal being negotiated by Australia and 11 other countries. If agreed to, the deal would account for 800 million people and 40% of the world's economy, making it one of the world's biggest trade deals. Australia joined the TPP negotiations in 2011 under the Gillard government, and negotiations have since continued under the coalition government, which has been largely led by the US. 12 negotiating countries include Australia, America, New Zealand, Canada, Japan, Singapore, Vietnam, Malaysia, Burma, Chile, Mexico, and Peru. The coalition government claims that the TPP would open up trade and invest opportunities for Australian and Asia-Pacific region by reducing barriers for Australian exporters. However, we have only their word to go by, seeing negotiations are conducted behind closed doors, and the text of the arrangement won't be made public until the deal is signed. Interesting. According to GetUp.com, who are getting people to sign a petition against the Australian TTPP, they say that the TTPP puts a number of interests to the forefront, including in ISPs being forced to spy on us and dob on you for copyright infringement. We all know that privacy is illegal, but treaty gives the US companies the power to pull strings that could heavily hand spying, fines, internet service disconnection, and even criminal charges the norm for being almost the most minor and potentially unintentional infringements. So GetUp put together an advertisement last week explaining the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal and what it means to Australian families. It's 46 seconds. It's 46 seconds, and it is like any other political advertisement in the world. So have a listen.
What does the Trans-Pacific Partnership mean for your family? Under the TPP, multinational corporations can sue the Australian government in secret corporate courts over laws that keep cigarettes out of the hands of our kids. Protect the Great Barrier Reef.
Mom, Nemo's dead.
Protect your rights at work.
Dad, when's Mom coming home?
When global megacorporations says she can.
And laws that reduce harmful pollution. Oh, and the TPP will make medicines more expensive too. Yes, medicines.
Don't let the government hand sovereignty of this country over to foreign corporations.
Okay, so first of all, I like the nuclear family as much as the next guy does. But apart from that, okay. Everyone, take a deep breath. The world is not going to hell in a handbasket. But apart from that, I mean, it's... Yes, that these are extreme views. Yes, these are top secret trade negotiations for a reason, because things are classified. Oh, no. I think I believe that things have to be classified for a reason. We're not just going to be going, hey, here's information, hello, have fun. I mean, these negotiations have been going on for 5 years now. I mean, GetUp is basically saying stop the T- T- TPP, basically. But I want to look at it from the other side. Now, I want to look at it from the side, and I do this often on this show. I look at the most unpopular position, and I go, let's do that. Let's have a look at that unpopular position, and let's break that down. So, if we were to block ourselves from any sort of form of international trade, for example, as Australians, what benefit would that be for us? That would have no benefit to us whatsoever. Think about it. If we locked ourselves from the entire world, that would mean that we would have no relationships with anyone. And, you know, World War One and World War Two were apparently a thing. So we don't want a repeat of that, do we? But let's have a look at the other extreme example. Let's look at the other opinion of, okay, let's say we do enter these TPP, first of all, get a better acronym, second of all, let's have a look at that, because if we do enter the TPP, we would establish diplomatic relationships with, well, I would assume we would form diplomatic relationships with the 13 countries on that list, 12 other countries on that list. It's interesting to me that we have to enter a trans-Pacific partnership with 12 other people. Now, I get that trade deals aren't easy as other negotiations. I get that. But and the other say saying that this is completely bad because we'd be tying with these other countries and multinational corporations, this, that, and the other thing. I get that. I really do. Full disclaimer, I work for a multinational company for a living. They will remain nameless, but you get the point. I work for them for a living. So, that was my bathroom. But that aside, multinational companies suing the government. So, what? I don't understand where that's come from. Where did that come from? I don't understand. But anyway, I don't understand a lot of things that go on. So, you know, I just want to say, TPP is not good, but diplomatic trading is required. As we continue here on GLS, the internet providers. Internet service providers have a round of applause for the internet service providers. They've really put in a top effort. They really have. Less than a third of them have actually stuck to the submitted retention plans. While hundreds haven't put forward proposals, placing them in technical breach of the country's metadata laws. The Attorney General's Department had confirmed 229 plans by ISPs to show that they complied with the laws, which requires them to collect and store metadata, but just 79 have been processed. Hundreds more of ISPs have not submitted plans as they struggle to understand what is required to collect them and store metadata for Australians, despite the retention laws coming into effect on October 13th. There are more than 400 ISPs operating in Australia, including large telcos like Telstra, and other smaller operations given 6 months to ready themselves. It's Internet Australia chief Laurie Patton said the process was flawed from the start and has called for Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to fast-track a review of the legislation, arguing it is rushed through when it was introduced. It is too complex and makes ISPs unviable. Quote, successive attorney generals from both sides rejected the pressure from law enforcement agencies to bring data retention legislation, end quote, he told the AAP on Wednesday, adding, Attorney General George Brandis and his department, as I knock my headphones off, that is very fun, were just following the then Prime Minister Tony Abbott's instructions. Okay then. I did say this analogy earlier on in the program, but it's important to emphasize it again as we bring up these stories again. I think it's interesting. I compared this to what if you and your community, you suddenly told that everyone who was being the babies were being best for breastfeeding, or a better way of saying that is mothers that are breastfeeding need to stop that and to, the law of the land is to now feed everyone formula. You can't just say that and expect people to do that. That's not how it works. There are particular stages, there are particular plans that people have to go on. You have to approach things with certain stages, and I believe that these retention laws have just been, yes, it's been apparently oodles amount of notice, but I think that these plans have been just dumped on these smaller operations, and these smaller operations don't have the resources to accept them. So it's just, I mean, it's interesting, like, then, like, those people have, you know, no resources to implement plans like this and are ridiculous to expect this of people. But anyway, as we continue here on GLS, here's a question for you, and we will have the answer as we continue. We are celebrating Back to the Future Day today. Here's a question for you. How are the police celebrating Back to the Future Day? As we continue, it's 11:49.
Sparklers and sprinklers, Twinkies and Weenies, the innocents before climbing our windows. The smell of that first campfire lasted on your clothes.
Found the most generic live show. This is the generic live show with Dale Campbell.
Space, you were too nervous to make cooking love on pizza, and I hate ice cream.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday, GLS. I'm Dale Campbell. Thank you for joining us, whether you're listening to us on the YouTube podcast, Google Plus, Facebook, however you're consuming the show, we do appreciate your consumption. Now, before we went to the break, we posed you a question. How is the Queensland Police Service celebrating Back to the Future Day. We have the answer for you. We have found the answer. Police in Queensland say they have developed a hoverboard unit after a silver car crashed near a cinema. This is hilarious. We add the statement here, and the statement says, here's the statement, the official statement. Quote, this morning, police officers from the Mount Isa hoverboard unit were called to attend a traffic crash on Rodeo Drive. A silver sedan has crashed into a power pole near the cinema. When questioned what speed he was doing, the driver stated that he was going 88 miles per hour. The 17-year-old man was charged and was in possession of a license that expired over 30 years ago. Investigations into the vehicle of what a flux compactor is are ongoing. The Mount Isa cinema received a loss of power to the building. Owner Jody Sanders said the driver got out of the car and asked for a Pepsi. Quote, he also wanted to know when we would be playing Jaws 19, unquote, Jody Sanders said. The damage to the power pole caused power outage to the area. Mount Isa Mayor Tony McGrady advised that the power outage caused damage to the town clock, which has stopped working. Quote, we have repairs underway to save the clock tower, Mayor McGrady said. That is the most amazing thing ever. The satire was going along for the first half of what ended up being many tributes paid on Back to the Future Day. It is Back to the Future Day. Thank you. We are doing a show on Back to the Future Day. So this episode has been very, very Back to the Future heavy. So we have kind of relied on that a bit. But it's a bunch of fun. It's fun. The crash described in the press release mirrors the key moment in Back to the Future 2 plot when Marty McFly, 17, and Doc go forward in time. It said the officers asked the 17-year-old what driver he was doing. He replied 88 miles per hour, which is 142 kilometers per hour. The speed of the pair modified silver DeLorean hit to the trigger, the flex compactor sent them back in time. It was hilarious. It was also posted to the edited, the photoshopped image. This is the best part of the whole thing. It was also posted an edited image of the officers rushing to the scene on their hoverboards. Mount Isa cinema owner Jody Sanders was quoted as saying the driver asked when Jaws 19, the film being screened at Holomax Cinema, the film was showing. Mount Isa Mayor Tony McGrady, meanwhile, was quoted by saying the repairs were underway to save the clock tower, which is the famous scene is hit by lightning. Queensland Police Media is framed for its light-hearted social media posts. It previously posted warnings on Facebook about wet roads from the tears of Top Gear fans after the show was cancelled and cautioned drivers not to go ape after a lorry of carrying bananas was crashed. And I do like the Queensland Police Service because they do have a light heart to all of their stuff. So they do know how to have a party over there at the Queensland Police Service. And that is kind of the best thing in the history of the planet. And that concludes our broadcast day here at GLS. Thank you everyone for joining us. And we hope that you do like this new format. And we hope you do like this format. It's going to be a weird format for a couple of weeks, but we'll find our footing. And it's new. We're exploring it. It's something that it's something that it's different. But happy Back to the Future Day. Happy day for GLS to be back on the air. It's a happy day for all. Thank you for everyone for joining us. It's 12 o'clock.
You're listening to a program of the Chef Wonder Media Network. For this and other shows, visit chefwondermedia.net.
This has been a Geek.io production.
Copyright 2015. Geek.io. Geek. Geek. Geek.